Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the heat advisory has been extended yet again. It's in effect until 8 o'clock tomorrow night, with heat index values up to 96. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and the New York State Department of Health are urging residents to take caution this summer as air quality shifts. We'll have the latest. Plus, Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government is here with an update on expanding Move Sullivan and the latest on the Ethics Board. Plus, comedy night in Hurleyville with a recognizable name, Christian Finnegan from Best Week Ever. And the Deep Water Literary Festival opens today. And today, we conclude our week of previews with a publishing legend, Victoria Wilson. That's all coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. A hearing is set for this morning in Florida. Donald Trump is challenging the appointment of Special Counsel Jack Smith. Meanwhile, new federal filings show that the former president has overtaken President Biden's cash advantage. NPR's Amy Held reports Trump campaign donations came pouring in after his felony conviction in New York.
The candidates are counting down the weeks until their party conventions later this summer and days until their first debate of the election next week. They are also counting their campaign coffers. The latest FEC filings show Trump had more than $116 million at the end of May, to Biden's $91 million. Trump saw a surge in donations shortly after he became the first former president convicted of felony crimes on May 30th, overtaking Biden's cash advantage. Biden's campaign says it raised $85 million in May alone, but it has been outspending Trump's, largely on ad buys, focusing on his felon status, as Trump, too, spotlights his legal travails, in his case, turning them into fundraising windfalls. Amy Held, NPR News.
In southern Gaza, food prices are soaring as the looting of trucks of aid and commercial goods continues along a stretch of road under a daytime pause in fighting. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports.
The pause in fighting is along approximately 7 miles of a main road in southern Gaza from the Kerem Shalom border crossing. But aid groups say law and order has completely broken down on that road, making it extremely difficult to get aid to those it's meant for. NPR's producer in Gaza, Anas Baba, witnessed a commercial food truck being looted on Tuesday. He tells us that some food is getting to the shops, but the looting has caused prices to skyrocket after being sold and resold on the black market.
We do have some of the vegetables, chicken, and even some fruits, but the prices is insanely high.
He says items cost more than 10 times what they did before the war. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks opened mixed as the National Association of Realtors reported a drop in home sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones rose about 70 points in early trading.
Sales of existing homes in May were down 0.7% from the previous month and almost 3% lower than this time last year. High mortgage rates are a drag on the housing market. They've not only kept a lot of would-be buyers on the sidelines, they've also discouraged would-be sellers who are reluctant to give up their much cheaper existing loans. A shortage of homes on the market pushed prices to a record high last month, averaging $419,000. The combination of high prices and high interest rates means the average monthly payment on a house bought today is more than twice what it was in 2019. Mortgage rates have come down slightly in the last 3 weeks. They're now averaging just under 6.9%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. TikTok is moving forward with plans to appeal a federal law to ban the app in the U.S. unless it's sold. NPR's Bobby Allen reports.
TikTok's legal team for the first time revealed internal documents spelling out the behind-the-scenes negotiations the company has had with the Biden administration, and it includes a 100-page national security agreement that would have given federal officials oversight of TikTok's operations in the U.S., including the ability for American officials to effectively hit a kill switch on TikTok nationwide if it was ever considered a threat.
NPR's Bobby Allen reporting. The case could ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court. President Biden issued a disaster declaration in New Mexico. Wildfires are still burning in Ruidoso and surrounding areas in the southern part of the state. The declaration provides federal aid for local, tribal, and state recovery efforts, including grants for temporary housing and home and business repairs. Officials are investigating what started the fires. Two people have died. Storms yesterday helped slow down the flames, although flooding disrupted firefighting operations in some places. This morning, evacuation orders are still in place in many areas. The Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers face off tonight in Game 6 of the NHL Final. If the Panthers are victorious, they will win the Stanley Cup for the first time. If Edmonton wins tonight, they tie up the series 3 games apiece. The game is in Edmonton. I'm Kristen Wright, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their travel card, Venture. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and we'll speak to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government in just a moment, but the heat advisory has been extended. The National Weather Service extended the heat advisory until 8 p.m. tomorrow. Heat index values getting up to around 96, 83 now in Liberty, and that real feel heat index is 94. Hot temperatures and, of course, high humidity can cause heat illnesses, so keep taking the precautions you've been taking in the last few days. And this from the New York State Departments of Environmental Conservation and Health. They're urging residents to take caution this summer as air quality shifts. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC's Samantha Simmons reports.
Last summer, DEC forest rangers were deployed on several missions in Canada to combat wildfires that burned more than 18 million hectares and negatively impacted air quality across the Northeast for weeks. They hadn't been deployed to Canada since 2005. DEC Interim Commissioner Sean Mahar says major events like Canadian wildfires prove the importance of monitoring air quality.
Through the laws and regulations that we've passed, we have really created cleaner skies here in New York. But as we're part of a global system, we are impacted by things and events that happen in other parts of the globe. So last summer, obviously, the Canadian wildfires had a major impact on our air quality, and it really highlighted the need for folks to use the resources that we have available and that we are putting out regularly.
State Health Commissioner James McDonald says with a plethora of parks and outdoor activities available across the state, residents and tourists should take precautions. McDonald says as summer begins, changes in air quality, like increases in particulate matter, ozone, and other pollutants, can lead to adverse air quality.
As that number goes higher, it definitely affects our health and well-being. You know, once it gets to 100 or higher, you know, some vulnerable individuals are going to start noticing, and they might want to minimize what they do out there, as if you're extremely vulnerable. You know, but when it gets above, you know, other numbers, the higher it gets, the more it can affect everybody. When it gets above 150, people in the entire population might want to take note and maybe be careful how you do exercise outside.
McDonald says residents need to accept that the climate has changed and there will be periodic shifts in air quality as a result. Particulate matter, which is a mixture of solids and liquids and can be easily inhaled, are often emitted from smokestacks, fire, and unpaved roads. The EPA says most particles in the atmosphere are, quote, pollutants emitted from power plants, industries, and automobiles. According to AirNow, the air quality index ranges from 0 to 301 and even higher. A good air quality day, valued at 0 to 50, means air pollution poses little or no risk. An AQI between 101 and 150 is unhealthy for sensitive groups, and 201 to 300 is very unhealthy, and everyone should exercise caution. Sensitive groups are considered those with heart or lung disease, older adults, children and teenagers, and those active outdoors. Those affected are asked to reduce exposure, take more breaks, and keep treatment for asthma on hand when alerts are issued. Earlier this year, the University at Albany received $1 million through the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to promote community air quality monitoring. The grants are meant to promote positive health outcomes in underserved neighborhoods throughout the state. Despite concerns about air quality, one effort meant to reduce pollution in New York City has been put on hold. Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul indefinitely paused a plan that would charge a new toll for drivers entering Lower Manhattan, known as congestion pricing. Hochul says the plan, which was also meant to reduce traffic and bolster the MTA, was outdated and needed to be reevaluated. Mahar says while congestion pricing is out for now, the state has other legislation in place.
And that's why we're advancing the Advanced Clean Truck Rule and other steps to really make sure our transportation networks are decarbonizing and becoming cleaner, which will directly impact and have an important impact on reducing air quality impacts in communities across the state.
The Advanced Clean Trucks Rule, which was adopted in 2021, requires manufacturers of vehicles more than 8,500 pounds to increase zero-emission vehicle sales in New York in an effort to meet Hochul's goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 85% by 2050. Air quality alerts and advisories for New Yorkers are available through text and email. Samantha Simmons, WAMC News.
And a reminder, you can sign up for those alerts at the government website. And we have someone from Sullivan County Government, Dan Hoost, who's here every Friday. He's the communications director. Surprise. And also you can get information about cooling centers and other heat-related information at the county level here in Sullivan County.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually have an interactive map that you can find in our GIS, Geographic Information System section. It's heating and cooling centers. Boy, heating right now just sounds so unappetizing. But we do have cooling centers there listed on the map. We do not have any official cooling centers. What we have are, well, I guess, unofficial cooling centers. The government center, your local libraries. We even list places like Walmart, where as long as they're, you know, not going to chase you out or you're not making any issues or whatever, they're great places to be during the heat of the day. At night, it becomes a little trickier with that. If you are in a life-threatening situation or need some help, you know, 911 is a good place to start, or your local police department.
Yeah, that, and that heat advisory in effect again until Saturday night, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Current air quality is actually fair.
Yep.
The air quality in the lower Hudson Valley and closer to the city, there's an alert out from the DEC in New York. So again, stay cautious. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's going on in Monticello. There was a meeting of the legislature yesterday. Mm-hmm. Lots going on. Let's talk about some of the rules of the legislature that were discussed. Limiting public comments to 3 minutes. Why did this all come up?
Yeah, they've been talking since they first convened about changing rules of the legislature. Most of it has to do with just a little wording here, a little wording there. Nothing too big, although you can read the rules of the legislature. They are actually available online, and they can be quite fascinating. And as I say, an informed citizen is a powerful citizen. So understanding how the legislature operates is probably in the taxpayer's best interest. But one of the things that was a debate topic yesterday and has always been for years and years, you know, I go back to the very first legislature when I was, now I'm going to sound old, when I was a young cub reporter assigned to the government beat for the Sullivan County Democrat way back in 1996. That was the first term of the first Sullivan County legislature. Yes, I am as old as dirt. But anyway, it's been a talk since then and in other places as well. How long should the public be allowed to speak? It is not actually a guaranteed constitutional legal right that you can hold forth in a public meeting as long as you want to. The people who run the meeting, in this case, the legislators, have the legal ability to actually limit that. So the question becomes, how long? Because as some people said yesterday, well, 3 minutes, can you really get all your points across in 3 minutes? Other folks said, well, after you get past 3 or 5 minutes, I'm not sure you have the attention anymore of the elected officials. It's just that kind of thing. Attention span can be very limited. What I like to tell people, though, is you do not have to just wait for a public meeting to talk to your legislator. In fact, I've found it personally more effective, and with people that I have counseled, to talk to your legislator individually and directly. And if you need to get to more legislators, talk to each one of them individually. There's only 9 of them. It's actually not that hard to reach them. We have email addresses for them that they check. They have given us permission to put out their cell phone numbers where you can reach them directly. A lot of people find them in the grocery store. Those are very effective ways to talk to your legislator. Now, if it's something that you think is going to take up some time, probably behooves you anyway to put it in the form of a letter so that you can collect your thoughts and then either bring that with you when you come to an appointment that you make with one of the legislators, or you mail it to the legislature. Those letters are read. They are not tossed in the trash. In fact, we get so few letters that any letter that comes in gets a great deal of attention from the citizenry. So there are a number of different ways for you to reach out to your legislator beyond just going to public meetings, sort of that traditional view. Whether they actually go to the 3 minutes or not, that's going to be determined probably next month. Right now, sort of open. The prior legislature, I think, had it at 3 minutes, maybe five, extendable to five. But even if they go to the 3 minutes, it will still be up to each individual committee chair whether they require the public to abide by that. They can still say, for example, I think Kat Scott in her Health and Human Services, she's already made it clear, there's not going to be a time limit. She actually noted with some irony, I think, that a lot of times the legislative meetings go long because of the legislators, not because of the public. And I don't think she got a lot of disagreement on that. But I just want to tell people, don't limit yourself to coming to a public meeting to speak to your legislator. There are actually, I think, just as, if not more effective ways to make your point with them and talk to them directly.
So again, not excluding public comment. Public comment is actually required, but it's just a matter of the timing is allowed. And this is just to help make the meetings more efficient.
That's what they're talking about. But again, there's debate about that as to whether that will actually help make them more efficient or not. And I think they're going to continue talking about that. I would guess there's probably majority support for that 3 minute limit. But one thing that I think Legislator Alvarez said yesterday is he does not want to see what happened in the past legislature where the mic was simply cut off. Mm. So suddenly you couldn't hear the person talking anymore. He felt that's disrespectful to the public. And I think all the other legislators feel the same way. So it'll probably just be a gentle reminder at some point from the chair if they are looking to enforce this. All right, you've hit your 3 minutes. Please wrap it up.
A little bit more of the business of the legislature, this time regarding the ethics board. We've talked about this when you've been here before about finding members for the ethics board. It looks like five new members were confirmed.
Yes. Yes, they were confirmed. They actually get appointed by the county manager, Josh Potosik. That is written into the law, or the local law for the ethics board. Legislators, by the way, too, did not know who these people were ahead of time. By their own direction to the county manager. Josh wanted actually to let them know, but they felt that that would be crossing an ethical line where they might be seen as influencing what should be a very independent ethics board. So they said, Josh, just put forward to us the five people that you think out of, I think he interviewed about a dozen, who should be on this ethics board. So we have Sherry Graham from Liberty, who is an executive in the banking field. We have a person named Liju Varghese, I think is how I'm pronouncing it, who is a nurse and is a nursing administrator in one of our local healthcare organizations. We have Julian Dawson, who is the current chief professional officer of the United Way of Sullivan County in Monticello. We have Juanita Foley, who is also in the banking, but also in the legal business, international banking, legal business. It's amazing the people we have in the woods of Sullivan County. And then we have retired family court judge Mark Medaw from Rock Hill, who are going to be on our ethics board. The county manager appreciates everybody who responded to this. We actually didn't think we were going to get more than just maybe a couple of interested applicants. And like I said, we got a dozen of very high quality professionals and people who have a deep interest in the ethical operation of government.
And so they're there. And if an ethics complaint about the legislature comes up, it goes to the ethics board.
Actually, any ethics complaint regarding Sullivan County. can be brought to the ethics board. I believe there is one that has been waiting for a quorum to be created on this board that now exists. They will begin their term in July, which lasts for 3 years. They can have another 3-year term if they wish. But at this point, the legislature is also looking at possibly bouncing ethics complaints up to the state level rather than keeping it at the local level, because there are some legislators who feel that the ethics board has been weaponized politically in the past. And while I am not at all casting aspersions on this group, I think this is a great group that we have for the ethics board. There is a concern that there might be in the future, whether with this board or another board, pressure put upon them politically to act in a certain fashion or make a certain determination. And some legislators are like, I don't even want to go down that route. Let's talk about putting it at the state level. So in another month or two, I think we're going to have clarity as to whether this board stays for its entire 3-year term or they decide down the road to dissolve it and make it a state level ethics board.
And this is this a requirement, or this is an ethics? The ethics board is something that the legislature has required.
Right. The legislature has required.
No, state, yeah, not requirement. State. Mm-hmm. But they're saying that they might want to then just remove this and move it to the state after more research.
And all the applicants were told about that ahead of time. They came in eyes wide open that this was a possibility, that they might not serve the whole 3 years, but they may as well. So it really, I have no speculation to offer on that other than I can say it's going to be an item of discussion in the coming months.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, who is the communications director at Sullivan County Government. He gives us an update from Monticello every Friday. Yesterday's meeting was some discussion about restoring the Human Rights Commission to working order. Let's remind folks about the Human Rights Commission and how it's been out of order.
Right. Yes, it's just not really, you know, it's through our Human Resources Office we've been taking human rights complaints and then bouncing them up to the state if they needed to be, if they couldn't be resolved locally. But our Human Resources Office, that's not their primary focus. Obviously, they're about employment for county government. So the office has been under them for some time, but currently it doesn't have an executive director or a working board of commissioners. There are 9 commissioners, one appointed by each of the legislators, and an executive director who up till now has been part-time. Though a lot of the former ones will tell you it was a full-time job. So legislators had long debated, well, do we dedicate money to it to have a local human rights commission, or do we continue bouncing it up to the state? And it seems there's consensus now on the legislature to have a full-time executive director and to have something I'll be putting out a press release about shortly, to have a new 9-member board of commissioners. So I'll be putting out, just like I did for the ethics board, a press release inviting people to send letters of interest, in this case, not to the county manager, but to the legislature clerk, Anne Marie Martin, if they are interested in serving on the Human Rights Commission. And then those decisions on who actually will be left up to legislators, who may bring in their own folks too, their own applicants. But it's something that we want to be transparent about and open up to anyone in the community who wants to apply.
This seems like a step in the right direction in terms of resurrecting the Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's at least putting something in place that will relieve the Human Resources Department of having to handle it directly, which, again, like I said, it's not their primary purpose.
Also, expanding Move Sullivan, this is now official? These new stops are coming in?
As long as the State Department of Transportation says yes, but there's no reason to think they're going to say no. So, yes, it was really exciting to listen to our Commissioner of Community Resources, Laura Quigley, talk about this. Basically, it's her and our county manager, Josh Potosik, who made this happen several years ago. Ridership has rebounded from post-COVID, where it had a low, to a high in the last year of 90,000 rides, over 90,000 rides given. When we started out, we were cracking, I think, just maybe 20,000. So this has become a very important resource in Sullivan County, a free resource for those who use it. Obviously, it's taxpayer supported, but it's something that the legislature feels is very important. 52% is reimbursed of the cost, is reimbursed by the state and federal governments. So we're not shouldering it all on our own. But it's become such a lifeline and resource for people to get to work, to doctor's offices, to shopping, to local businesses, that we had put out a survey not too long ago to say, okay, you guys have told us you want this. Now, where do you want it to go next? And of course, we had people from all over the county interested in it extending there. Finally, though, Laura and her team whittled it down to where did it seem to be the most interest? And that seems to be to create a loop, which would be Livingston Manor, Roscoe, Calicoon Center, Jeffersonville, Youngsville, White Sulphur Springs, and Liberty. So what we would call Route E, or I would call the Northern Loop, because it's in the northern part of the county. So, of course, people in Calicoon, Narrowsburg, Berryville, they're going to be like, hey, wait a minute, what about us? Well, if history is any guide, we continue to expand this. This will be, like I said, Route E. We just started with a Route A and Route B, which were basically just mirror images of one another between Fallsburg, Monticello, and Liberty, our population centers. Then we added a Route C, which goes over to White Lake and Bethel and Swan Lake in that area. We added a Route D, which goes down to Bloomingburg and Wurtsboro. Now we've got a Route E. I think there's every expectation, certainly intention, to have a Route F, a G, I mean, if we need to, right through to Z.
Go to
and
Z.
Then we'll have to figure out after that. I'm not sure exactly. Double A, double B? I don't know. But it's exciting about this because it brings this free service that people have relied on to more of our population areas in the county and get them to where they need to go.
Is there an expectation of where this Route E service might begin?
I would speculate next year. I don't think it'll start this year because we've got to finish putting all the pieces together. We've got to create posters. We've got to do some signage. We've got to get the DOT sign off, which I don't know exactly when that's going to happen. So it could be when I get back, Laura tells me, no, we're going to start it later this year. I don't know. But as soon as we have a date, I will be sharing that here and in general with the public because it's going to be big news and make a transformative impact.
Another note concerning transportation. When I saw this note, I misread it. I read it too quickly. I thought it said flying cars.
Oh, yes. Somebody said that to me yesterday.
How did we get flying cars at the government level? But there are four fly cars to augment the county's EMS system. What are fly cars?
Yeah, well, I being a layperson, probably call them mini ambulances kind of thing, but they're not for transporting people per se. Therefore, they have the first aid equipment and the stuff that an EMT might need to help somebody and stabilize them until an ambulance can actually arrive and transport them, or maybe stabilize them to the point where an ambulance is not necessary. The legislature has recognized there is a crisis of ambulance EMS service in Sullivan County. It's no fault of the volunteers. They are working as hard as they can. We also have paid folks, a paid service in the area, but it's limited. I mean, you're limited in the volunteers that you have. You're limited in the number of ambulances. And some people are like, well, why haven't you gotten a whole ambulance? Well, because that would be a lot more expensive to do. And there's other regulations. We want to try out this fly car solution first, see how that works as we try to address the fact that sometimes people are waiting more than an hour for an ambulance to show up at their property. Can you imagine if you are needing an ambulance, you do not need it an hour from now. You need it right then and there. So these are going to be strategically placed around the county. That's why we're getting four, sort of a northwest, southeast kind of setup. I'm hoping actually that Patricia will be talking to our public safety commissioner, Scott Schulte, about this in detail on Monday, if everything works out, on our piece on the local edition, where he'll go into more detail about where we might put these things and when it will start. But these will be drivers paid by Senior Care Emergency Medical Services, which is an accredited EMS provider currently providing high volume services in New York and New Jersey. So it was something we issued a competitive request for, I think proposals or bids for, and they fit the bill the best. And we hope that this will really make a difference, or at least show us where we need to focus and how we need to fine tune this to ensure that people are not waiting a long time to get an ambulance to their home or business.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk more with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. We'll talk about some of the events going on in the county, including the big event that everyone waits for, Household Hazardous Waste Event.
Woohoo!
That actually is a big one.
It is.
We'll be right back. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's Electric Mountain, featuring the very best of global dance music. I play the best of dance music from back in the day to today, and every week I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno here with Dan Hoost, the communications director from Sullivan County Government. Before the break, we were talking about, and I tongue-in-cheek said, a really big event. It is actually big because, you know, you have these hazardous waste products around your house, and you're like, what do you do with them? There is that event coming up this weekend at the Monticello Transfer Station where you can take that stuff. Let's tell folks about it.
It's a great opportunity, and a lot of people mark their calendars with this because it accepts all sorts of things that either would cost you or might not be accepted otherwise. We've got under the acceptable list, paint, solvents, stains, ink, pool chemicals, acids, wood preservatives, fluorescent bulbs, mercury-containing devices, poisons, roofing tar, adhesives, creosote, fire extinguishers. We've had all sorts of things come in at this point. We're like, yeah, we could take them, but there are a few things we can't take. And it's, by the way, it's going to be this Sunday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Monticello Transfer Station. That's 91 Landfill Drive in Monticello. We can't take regular household garbage. That's not what this is about. Commercial, industrial, or agricultural waste. Medical waste or pharmaceuticals. Radioactive material, and people have brought that to us before. Explosives, people have brought that to us before. Ammunition, bulk liquids that are in tanks like larger than 5 gallons. LP or gas tanks. This is not for electronics, tires, or fridges. But a lot of things that you're going to find in your garage or basement are things we can take. Like I said, like acids, that kind of thing. Like people actually have this sitting in their house and like, what do I do? I can't just pour it out on the ground.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the first thing there, paint. I can't tell you how many paint cans I have down in the basement. I'm going to mark my calendar for Sunday. Where can I get more information about the timing and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable?
We have it all on our solid waste recycling page on the county website or also on our Facebook page, Sullivan NY Recycles. Pre-registration, by the way, is not required. Just make sure that you know what you're bringing is going to actually be acceptable and that you also bring a photo ID and or proof of Sullivan County residency because that's only open to Sullivan County residents.
Another event happening today, right? Later today, the Romanian photographs from the Belgian expedition of Frederick Cook. Our own Hortonville's own Frederick Cook Explorer. Those are going to be on display starting this afternoon.
Yes, and we just announced this week, too, we're going to have a guitarist, an upcoming guitarist named Will Sellenrod, who is going to be kicking things off at 4 p.m. Of course, this being that it's a Carol and Aldo Troiani event, it's going to have music as part of it. It's just who they are and how they do it. And, of course, it's very popular, the music that they put on there. But it's a cool way to spend a otherwise hot day in the coolness of the county museum, which is air-conditioned, in Hurleyville. Starts at 4 o'clock with the music. 6 o'clock will be a discussion and lecture about these photographs, which are from Romania, because there was a Romanian doctor that joined our Dr. Frederick Cook from Hortonville on a trip to Antarctica, which sounds like a wonderful place to go right now, back in 1897. And these photos have not been exhibited in the United States before. So this is going to be a real moment, possibly a once-in-a-lifetime moment, because I believe at some point these photos are going back to Romania to see more about this fascinating trip to Antarctica and history that involves Sullivan County.
And, you know, that's today at 4. Go see that. Then go to the opening out of Delaware Deepwater Literary Festival right there on the Delaware in Narrowsburg. Also coming up is, and you know, we don't want to bury the lead here, but Tuesday, June 25th, primary day. It is only for folks who are registered Republican voters.
Right.
And it's for the 100th district.
Assembly district.
To choose the candidate in the Republican side who will then go into the general to face off against the current, the Democratic candidate, which has already been selected. So
right.
Early voting's already started. And then primary day for Republican registered Republicans is
just Republicans, Tuesday. No Democratic primary. And we're still doing early voting through Sunday at both the government center and our public health building in Liberty. But on Tuesday, the regular polls in the in all the townships except Fremont, Rockland, and Neversink. So if you live in Fremont, Rockland, and Neversink, there is no primary for you, whether you're Democrat or Republican. But in the rest of the towns of Sullivan County, it's for Republicans only. To choose who their candidate will be for the 100th Assembly District in the general election this November.
And if you're not in Sullivan County, you're listening to us in another New York county, there are other things going on the 25th for your ballot. Check with your local Board of Elections. But in Sullivan County, that's just the one thing for registered Republicans to decide. And then before we go, I wanted to mention your video podcast. Did I know you had a podcast?
Well, we haven't had it for about 2 years, almost 2 years now, but we used to do it with the former chairman of the legislature, Rob Doherty, and the vice chair, Michael Brooks. We called it Let's Talk Sullivan, and we would have it monthly. We would do it after the end of each full board meeting so that people could get sort of a wrap-up from their legislators as what's going on, what happened, what are the priorities. The last one we did was when Hotsola Air actually went out in the field. We went to the hangar at the county airport when Hotsola Air moved in there, which they're still there, but it took a hiatus once we got to election season because we didn't want to highlight necessarily any one legislator over another. But now that we're past that, I had talked with our current chair, Nadia Reich, and she said, absolutely, I'd like to start that again. And so I filmed yesterday our chair and vice chair, Joe Perrello, and our commissioner of public works, Ed McAndrew, talking about what the future of our waste transit holds. Because right now we're trucking our household waste or municipal waste up to Seneca Meadows landfill upstate, which may or may not stay open in the next few years. We visited a waste to energy plant down in Long Island, and there are other things we're taking a look at and assessing. And so it was a chance for them to talk about what is on their minds with garbage. And also, actually, they got a little bit in about these fly cars, not flying cars, fly cars. So I expect to drop that on social media and on our website either Monday or Tuesday of this coming week.
All right. And this is on your YouTube channel or where can folks
find
it?
It'll be everywhere I can post videos, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and also on the county website itself.
Is it going to be like TikTok as well?
We aren't on TikTok yet.
No makeup tutorials or anything?
Once they figure out what they're doing with TikTok at the federal level, then we'll go to that. Although TikTok, too, is shorter than this probably will be. We won't keep you too long, but probably a 10 or 15 minute thing.
It might be interesting to see some legislators bust out some dance moves. I don't know. I'm just saying. Maybe that's just me.
We'll see.
Dan Hoost, who is the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. More information at sullivanny.us. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. We'll take a break, and when we come back, comedy comes to Hurleyville, a comedy night, and we'll get a preview with the headliner, Christian Finnegan, after this break. This is Radio Chatsko.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest-growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hello, I'm Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. You know, jazz is a great improvised art form that started in America, spread around the world, and is still going strong. That's why every Saturday afternoon I bring you the best in current jazz. It's the newest, most interesting music you can hear anywhere. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. Comedy comes to Hurleyville Performing Arts Center next week on Wednesday. Local comedian Patrick Holbert MCs Patrick and Friends, featuring headliner Christian Finnegan, who you might know from Comedy Central or VH1's Best Week Ever. He's recently settled in with his wife in Coshecton and is finding some comedic inspiration in the country, but he's never performed here.
You know, my wife and I have had a house there for about 12 years now, and I have managed to basically never perform up there. I had made myself a promise that I was going to not, cross those streams, so to speak. And I'm going back on that for this one night. I'm honestly looking forward to it because there's so many things that I'm going to do 20 minutes of material on Tex Market. I'm really looking forward to it. Honestly, it's like I never do get to perform, and we're about 25 minutes from Hurleyville, so I don't feel like it's I'm not going to run into people and my neighbors, I don't think. But I'm actually, super looking forward to it. I've heard the Hurleyville Performance Center is beautiful, and Patrick said great things about the show. So it's going to be a fun time for sure.
No, it's a great space, and you probably could do more than 20 minutes on PEX. But is there do you find some inspiration in this country life as well as your city life?
You know, it has been an adjustment for me. You know, my wife grew up in like the deep woods of Texas, and so it sort of reminded her of her childhood. You know, whereas I grew up in the suburbs, and I moved to New York City when I was a teenager. And so, to me, for the first few years, I constantly felt like I wanted to write a manifesto in my own blood or something every time I went up there, because it felt very much like it was some sort of Unabomber situation. I've since adjusted, and I would say I'm half city, half country at this point. There's a peace of mind that I get up there that I just can't, reproduce here in lovely Queens where I live the rest of the year.
You know, we know you from Chappelle's show, VH1's Best Week Ever. You've got 5 comedy albums, 3 comedy specials. Is it safe to say you've kind of seen it all and more, or do you see the comedy scene sort of evolving and developing in different ways? There's this resurgence with all the streaming out there. How are you seeing this sort of current comedy scene?
You know, I won't lie. It's the comedy scene is always evolving, and it's evolving in a lot of ways that I'm not a huge fan of personally. I get a little bit exhausted sometimes by the sort of pressure to have this sort of content mill. If for people who do a lot of social media, you're constantly seeing, crowd work clips and this sort of just constant stream of me, which is, I'm a Gen X dude. And so I have a bit of a, what you might call an old fashioned mindset to these things of just not putting yourself out there 100% of the time, 24/7. But that's just sort of the way the world has moved. And I would rather, I prefer a live setting. I prefer live audiences. I prefer the interactions that you can only get when you're physically in the room with people, as opposed to sort of people scrolling through their phones and seeing 30 seconds of your, crowd work, in between clips of, babies falling out of strollers and, people farting in church and, all the sorts of random stuff you see in your social media feed. Some of that's just cranky old man stuff. That's the way it is. I'm sure people who are my age when I was first starting probably thought the same thing about me. So that's just sort of the circle of life,
I identify with cranky old man face, so I feel you there. But there's also must be something about just the being on the road and being in those comedy clubs and being with your fellow comedians and being, that's the gig, that's the life. And there's something that you can't replicate on social media. You don't get that.
Well, and to me, it becomes even more valuable now when so much of our lives is spent in isolation. And obviously, everything was exacerbated by the pandemic. But, my wife owns a performance venue. We own like a comedy venue here in Queens. And so it's like we're all about live shows. We're all about live audiences and sort of the energy that you just can't reproduce on a phone. I just there's I always kind of try to explain to people that it's like, yeah, you can watch a lot of stuff online, but it's kind of like empty calories. It's fast food. There's just an energy that you just can't reproduce. The way that the sort of current landscape feels is, I remember there was a kid when I was in school who used to sort of entertain all the other kids when I was in like third grade, of stirring all the food on his lunch tray together into one just giant mash of gruel. And he would gross people out by eating it. And his defense was, hey, it's all going in the same place, which is technically true. And that's sort of how Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that feels to me. It's just all this giant sort of tasteless gruel, you know, whereas when you're in the room and you're laughing with other people in the physical space together, there's just something just more nutritious about that for your mind and for your soul. I mean, not to get all pretentious about it. Mostly it's just, you know, dumb sex jokes and whatnot, but there's just something better. And I think that I worry sometimes that we're kind of losing that ability to appreciate the sort of communal experience of enjoying something together, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, being this day and age, you are on the gram and other platforms. Are you still also writing your blog about new music?
I do, yeah.
Newsletter?
I write a newsletter every I write a newsletter called New Music for Olds, because I'm a 51-year-old dude, and I kind of came to a conclusion at one point that most of my friends, many of whom were like huge music fans in their 20s and 30s, have kind of stopped seeking out new music because it just feels like, oh, that's for younger people or whatever. And you know, there's so many crappy things about the sort of media landscape we live in now. But one of the nice things is that there's just this endless buffet of new music coming out all the time. And it's not all garbage. There's some great stuff coming out. And so I kind of just like to steer people towards, you know, what I'm listening to. And then obviously it's just the kind of excuse to make music jokes. And I'm sort of an old music geek. And so that's, yeah, newmusicforolds.substack.com.
You're using the internet for good.
I'm using it for my own good. I don't know whether it's global good, but if I have to use the internet, period, I'm going to use it in a way that helps me sleep at night.
Christian Finnegan is headlining Patrick and Friends Comedy Show at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center June 26th. More information at hpacny.org. And you can find Christian on the gram as well. Christian Finnegan, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much. I hope to see you guys on Wednesday.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, publishing legend Victoria Wilson in conversation at the Deepwater Literary Festival. We'll speak to her next.
People talk about polarization, but did you know most of us are in the hopeful majority, tired of political divisions and looking for a way out? That's why Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to have a conversation with someone different and not so different than you. It's one small step where strangers get to know each other as people. Help bridge the divide, one conversation at a time. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station helps are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Deepwater Literary Festival opens tonight and runs through the weekend. Radio Catskill is a media sponsor, and all week we've been bringing you highlights. This morning, a special treat. We are honored to speak to publishing legend Victoria Wilson. She spent 50 years at Knopf, almost as long as Mr. Knopf himself, shepherding the careers of many great writers, among them Anne Rice, Laurie Moore, Eve Babbitts, Laurie Colwin, and Helen Simpson. Wilson is also the author of an acclaimed biography of golden era Hollywood star Barbara Stanwyck. And as part of Deepwater Literary Fest 2024, she'll talk about that career and working with those famed figures such as Lauren Bacall and her own book on Barbara Stanwyck. That is going to be at Deepwater Literary Festival this weekend, tomorrow. And she's joining us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
I misspoke. It's actually in conversation Sunday at Krause Hall at 1:30 with Ben Shields. Thank you for joining us. And wow, just listing off some of those accomplishments, and those are just some of those accomplishments. Can you talk to us a little bit about your many, many years at publisher Knopf and just being part of that publishing empire, I guess?
Well, thank you for having me. I love Jeff, and I'm excited about the Deepwater Literary Festival. So Alfred A., as I call it, Alfred A. Gesundheit. well, it was, I mean, I'm still there, actually, because I'm still consulting and I'm still editing, because Knopf is a very special place, and it runs in one's blood and on a cellular level. And it was... sorry for the dog. It was and is an amazing place. It was and is very idiosyncratic, which is what made it so special and peculiar. And but nevertheless, it worked and continues to work. And I worked there. Bob Gottlieb hired me, and we worked together. And Bob was, of course, great Bob Gottlieb, who taught me pretty much everything. He was a genius and could do everything. He edited, he ran the house, and he would put a piece of paper into a typewriter, because we used typewriters then. And in 5 minutes, he would come up with a perfect piece of flaps copy. But what I learned from Bob is that basically no rules. There are no rules. There are as few meetings as possible, and everything sort of just worked by instinct. And then Bob left to run the New Yorker, and Sonny Mehta came to run Knopf. And he came from England, where he was running Pan Picador. And he was brilliant in that he sort of left Knopf alone and made it his own at the same time. And so it, you know, who could leave? It was just too irresistible. And we played charades in the hall, and we had picnics. Judith Jones, who is just having a biography written about her now, that's about to be published too, among other things, discovered the manuscript of Anne Frank and published Julia Child and Marcella Hazan and Joan Nathan, and I could go on, as well as Arthur Rubinstein, et cetera. I mean, the people who walked through the halls of that place were amazing, whether it was Yehudi Menuhin or Miss Piggy, who we published. And I have to say, though, everybody who walked into that office, but there was one person who walked into that office, and I was agog, and that was Lauren Betty Bacall. And Sidney Poitier, we published Sidney Poitier. So many people. And but when Lauren Bacall walked into that office, I was, as they said, gobsmacked. And then in the end, we worked together, and she was, you know, Betty Persky from Brooklyn, and a working girl.
You also got to profile another Hollywood star, Barbara Stanwyck, in your acclaimed autobiography of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel and True. Can you tell us a little bit about that, writing that, and just the you know, experience of telling her story?
Well, that was sort of interesting, because I published a lot of cultural history. I mean, I published fiction. I discovered Anne Rice. I published Laurie Moore from the beginning. I published people for 10, 20, 30 years. And that was what publishing is supposed to be, where there are long-term relationships with publishers and writers, and you see their work change over time, and as you change over time, and as the writer changes over time. Anyway, so I published a lot of cultural history, a lot of biography and memoir, and I thought one day I had the insane notion to write a biography myself. And so I made a list, as I would as if I were being an editor and were going to find a subject for a writer. And Barbara Stanwyck was on the list. I really didn't know anything about her except that I admired her work, but I didn't know that much about it. And I knew that she was a girl from Brooklyn, and that she was married to a monster called Frank Fay, and then that she married Robert Taylor, and that was about it. And So if somebody who had, read thousands and thousands of proposals, I thought, all right, I'll just write this in 5 minutes. I mean, I thought, okay, it'll take me 2 weeks to write this proposal. And I realized instantly that I went from being an editor, publisher, who was a sort of dignified human being, to being a writer who was full of fear, anxiety, and doubts. And so as the editor, I would talk to the writer and say, as the writer was saying, nobody's going to be interested in this book. And the editor was saying, just keep working. And it went back and forth. Anyway, eventually the book was sold to Michael Korda, Simon & Schuster. And I set out. I have no idea how. I didn't have the vaguest idea of how to write a book. But again, my whole training of trust one's instinct fell into play. And that's what I did. I just sort of took one feeble step in front of the other and worked. I worked during the day at Knopf, and I came home and wrote this book. And I'm now writing volume two. And there's much to say about writing an editor writing a book and then turning into a writer and what that experience is like and then what the publishing experience is like as somebody who has always been on the other side.
Yeah.
And here I was, this writer who's about to be published. And so much more to say on that subject.
Well, for someone who had not written before, and as you said, just sort of inch by inch went toward this direction in writing it. It received rave reviews. Janet Maslin in the New York Times called it, quote, 860 glittering pages. Before we go, I just want to ask you, given the experiences that you've had working at the height of New York publishing and having such acclaim, what does it mean to come and participate in a festival like the Deepwater Literary Festival, that's bringing literature to a more rural area and to have that interaction?
Well, I think it is absolutely, it's wonderful. It's exciting and it's great. It's a sort of evolutionary moment because it's important. First of all, I've lived in Sullivan County for 30 years, and I discovered it through my friend Martha Kaplan, who worked at Knopf, and then the New Yorker. She was the sort of pioneer who discovered Sullivan County for all of us. And it's great. I mean, it's exciting to have people having this level of conversation and to open it up to the public and to have people come. I've never been to Aaron's bookstore because I really don't go to Harrisburg that frequently, but I hear it's a great bookstore, which is really important. And, I mean, every community needs a good bookstore, and every community needs a live, vital, full of energy literary festival that can have these kinds of discussions about writing and art and creativity.
As you said, there's lots more to talk about. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but folks can still hear you talk. Catch Victoria Wilson in conversation with Ben Shields at the Deepwater Literary Festival. That's Sunday at 1:30 at Krause Hall in Narrowsburg. There's more information about that and the entire festival at deepwaterfestival.com. Victoria Wilson, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
All right, that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder to look on the website, wjffradio.org, for that big red button that says One Small Step, powered by StoryCorps. That's a way you can be part of the solution to help bring a little bit more humanity to everyone's lives. Check it out, wjffradio.org. It's Radio Catskill in partnership with StoryCorps. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
When in despair over your social media platform, take comfort, because digital domination is built on sand.
It just takes one good competitor, like TikTok, or one big scandal, like a live stream mass shooting, or one big privacy debacle, like Cambridge Analytica, and it can tip.
The life cycle of internet platforms on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. The heat advisory has been extended till 8 p.m. tomorrow. Expect heat values up into the upper 90s right now. The real feel heat index in Liberty is 98. Just keep using those precautions you've been taking in the last week. It's 11 o'clock.